Israel has been operating for decades in a special module of a people's army. Being the people's army means the loss of every IDF soldier is felt deeply, not only by their families and friends, but also the entire nation. Over the last 7 months, Israel has been at war, a war that started after the horrendous massacre carried out by Hamas on October 7th, and it has become one of the most defining wars in the country's history. Behind every fallen soldier, there are stories intertwined with a loving family, friends, and an entire community that embarked on a tragic journey of grief and mourning. I'm Lieutenant Tami Shoal, and I'll be the host of today's special mission brief for Remembrance Day.
The open threat to destroy us. Training commander has achieved a great triumph.
I'd like to introduce you to Meital and Yaakov, who are officers in the Casualties Department. Before we begin, I would like to thank you for joining us today. Ultimately, no one can fix the permanent impact of the loss of a loved one. However, Meital and Yaakov serve in a unique department that deals with the many faces of grief. They help support loved ones of fallen soldiers on the difficult journey of grief and loss and provide comfort to loved ones. Can you tell us more about the department, the day-to-day work, and the challenges?
So my name is Yaakov. I am head casualty officer of the infantry soldiers.
Hi, I'm Eital. I'm the lead of the casualties department of Vati Brigade. And we have almost 1,000 families who lost their loved ones.
Our day-to-day surrounds visiting wounded and disabled soldiers and assisting, accompanying, and visiting the bereaved families who have lost their loved ones, and staying in touch with them and creating the relationship between the families and the army.
So the casualty department actually was raised after October 1973, the Yom Kippur War, because of the understanding of the need to take care and to support families who lost their loved ones, the soldiers, and to support soldiers that got wounded or hurt during the war or during their military service. And we are there for them from the moment that we need to notify the family that something happened until the moment that there is no more family to support.
So you're talking about the job of the department, and to someone who is not familiar with the department, it sounds very noble and heroic, but at the end of the day, you wake up in the morning and there's things that you need to do. So I'm very interested in learning, how does a normal sort of day look to you in normal reality that we've been living for the past 7 months?
So our day-to-day is usually outside the office. We get to know the country very well. We drive around from up north to down south, meeting all the families and all the soldiers and taking the commanders and the heads of the brigades into visits and creating that connection and relationship with the families and the soldiers with the army. We support people, we come to their homes, we go to the hospitals, we meet them on their bases, and we stay alert and we stay ready for any time where we need to get called up to deal with a new casualty or a new wounded soldier. So on one hand, we can plan our day on visits and going round to families, but on the other hand, we know that we might have to drop everything and unfortunately deal with a new situation which we meet.
I think the most important thing that we have on mind all day long and even when we are going to bed in the end of the day is that our mission is to be there. To be there for the soldiers, to be there for the families. And in this specific war, I think one of the things that I understood very soon is that we need to be there for the commanders and for the warriors that are in Gaza. In the same time that we are not in Gaza and we are taking care of all the soldiers that got hurt.
In addition to supporting the families of the wounded soldiers and the soldiers and the disabled and the casualties, our department also supports the families of the missing soldiers and the hostages. And supporting them is a whole new world of staying in touch with them and being in contact with the army for every piece of information which we can give the families and create hope with them is a connection which we sustain and we are in charge of. Part of the challenges which we meet is supporting the families of the soldiers who were killed and their bodies are held hostage, and the grief and the loss meets them in a different way. And we are there also to support them and to be in touch with them and to give them every piece of information we can, and hope that as soon as possible their loved ones will be back and could be buried in the most respectful way that they deserve.
Another challenge, I think, of this war is handling with loss of civilians who were kidnapped.
We've met families that not only have lost their loved ones throughout this war, but also have lost their homes. Families from the north who are now escorted to other places because of the war, and families from down south which lost their homes on the 7th of October. And we try and we meet loss from so many perspectives, people who have lost more than one sibling and people who have lost more than one friend. And when bereavement and grief surrounds the country so strongly, we need to adapt to this situation, and we need to realize that we need to address the situation for casualties and loss also of civilians and of soldiers and of homes and of personal belongings, and be there for them and collect all this grief and loss together and support them together and everything in one way.
There was a situation where in the same house has been a soldier that died and a civilian that was kidnapped or died. And then we have the mission to get along with the two different or similar experience, but in a different way of support. But what I want to say is that we are not the story. And the story is about brave soldiers and brave families and brave nation that is handling the most difficult period of time in her old times. And I can see the connections between families. I can see the connections between the soldiers. If you would come to a hospital and you would see the soldiers that are handicapped and are very, very hurt, but they get the support from their friends that are still in Gaza or went out from Gaza to support them, and they give them power to get back to their feet or to get back to their lives. And this is the most beautiful and inspiring thing that a person can see and be a part of. When you see the families and you see the places, when you see the roots of the houses where our best men and women came from and unfortunately died. So you see the beautiful nation of Israel and you see the beautiful people that are part of this nation, and this is what makes us so special, and not only the casualties department.
We pray daily that the families can find some comfort and that all the soldiers will return home healthy, physically and mentally, and that all the hostages will come home. And we pray for days of peace, and that's, I think, the most we can ask for.
When there is no war, if soldiers get hurt, get injured, or die, we have the commanders near us. We're doing it together. We're going together to the houses. We're going together to the hospitals. And we do things together. And here in the specific war, they are not here. And they are not with us. And they can call us once in a month to ask, how is it going? How are the families and what is going on with them. And I understood that what I need to do is to tell those commanders that everything's okay and that they can go and complete their mission. And whenever they will go out back to Israel, we will be there and we'll go together to visit the soldiers and to visit the families. Until then, I don't want them to be concerned about what is going on with those families or soldiers. This is my responsibility, and we're doing the best that we can.
I strongly agree with Meital, and I also feel that above our mission inside the army to sustain and support the families, this is our national mission for the people who have lost their loved ones and who have given the most they can to protect our country and protect our people. And it's our national mission to support them and to be there for them from now, from the very first beginning until the end, until as long as there is a descendant to be in touch with and to support and to visit. We will stay in touch with them and we will help them and we will do whatever we can. And that's our mission at the end of the day.
So I want to touch on that for a moment, because I think that the concept of grief and loss can sound very clinical to a lot of people. Like, they imagine a knock on the door and then it's a cutaway scene and everything is okay again. But the work the department does, and when you talk about as long as there is a descendant, you're talking about generations upon generations that the department is in touch with and that is finding the right solutions and the right approach to be in touch with that family. So I would love to hear if you have any memorable experiences with different approaches you've had to take from different generations, maybe, let's say, or different families, because no one is the same and everyone's experience with grief and loss is, of course, different.
I have a lot to tell you about it. First of all, I would say time doesn't heal anything. Time can make you a little bit stronger. You can learn how to live next to the bereavement. But I will tell you a few things. In the beginning of the war, I was thinking about the families who have lost their loved ones before the war. 1 year before the war, 10 years before the war, and actually from the beginning of the Israel state. And I did some calls. I took 5 or 10 phone numbers of the families from all kinds of years, and I just called to say hello. And they told me that this war takes them back to the very first day of their loss. And their handling with their bereavement, and they want to give to the new families to support them. And one of those families told me that she went to Shiva to support family, and she came back and she was very sick, and she told me, it's too much for me. I cannot give her, this family, in this period of time, the power that I would like to give them. So the war is reaching to everybody, especially to the families who have experienced it before, and to the soldiers that got hurt and they are disabled from another war. They want to give power, and sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. There is no family that is like the other family. It depends on so many things. The relationship in the house, the relationship that they had to the soldiers that died, and what they can give them, what is the support that they have. We have now a soldier that got very, very hurt, and I can see the family. This family is amazing. They are next to him, and they are praying, and they did a WhatsApp group that every day they're sending what is going on and what is the progress with him and what does they need. And when he woke up 2 months after he's injured, he woke up to a family that is, they are very, very strong together. Next to them, there is a family that doesn't have the strength to to handle all this terrible period of time?
When we enter a new home, it feels like we prepare for everything and we prepare for nothing, because we come prepared and we make sure we know everything we know and we can support them from every possible way they need. But on the other hand, once we enter the house, we don't know what we're going to meet and what family we're going to see and what their needs are going to be and what is the way they are going to cope with their loss. And we always say that any of the ways is legitimate and it's okay. And we need to be with them in the way that they choose to go through the situation which they've met, walk alongside with them and support them in the way which they choose. And the Israeli community is demographically so it's vast, and we meet families from all sorts. And I remember the first time entering a Druze family and entering a Christian family and an Arab family, and the religious families are not the same as the non-religious families, and we have to adapt to the family and be for them in the way that they want. And as Meital said, mourning and grief doesn't end, and people feel that once wars are over, the work stops. And as more families join the bereaved families, these are only families who are adding on to the families which already exist. And I remember a situation throughout the war, visiting with a family in the IDF graveyard where their son was buried, and them seeing all the new graves that were added on because of the war, they were shook by it. And we don't realize always how this affects the families which have gone through this before. And we need to remember and be for the families, all the families, in the same way and in the way that they want us to be.
I have to ask you, because at the end of the day, we're a military, and a military is built to fight wars and win the wars and defeat our enemies. And I heard when preparing for the podcast that there's a summer camp for children and for siblings of bereaved families and siblings of deceased soldiers. And for a moment, I stopped myself and I was like, this is the IDF. This is a military that is currently fighting a war. And I have to hear your input on how different of a psyche it is when you're dealing with children of bereaved families, or if next of kin of soldiers who are no longer with us.
So one of the many things that the casualties department is doing is to bring the families moments of joy or relief, or to give them the place that they can be whatever they want to be. And the only place is when they are next to people that are similar to them and that can understand them and that will not judge them whatever they will choose to be. So during the years, we do vacations for parents. We do vacations and summer camps to grieved widows and to their children, the orphans. And what we are giving them in those places is a place to be. They can dance, they can cry, they can be angry, they can be silent, they can scream.
They can just be.
They can just be. And no one in the room will think that something is wrong with this woman or this man or these children. The summer camp is from birth till the age of 16. And the summer camp that you're talking about now is for the Chorvot HaBarzel families, is in the United States, and it's for 10 days. And we're doing it to several pieces of ages. But if it's not a war, in the daily years, we're doing the summer camp to orphans, and we have 1 week that it's only for them, and it's to give the widows time and to give them a place that they are together and they get friends, and it's friends for a lifetime. And the parents has their own vacation,
I have a story from around a year ago. So this happened previous to the war, when unfortunately we had to notify a family about the loss of their loved one who were abroad. They weren't in Israel. And as part of notifying them and assisting them from the moment they land, we wait for them on the exit of the plane and support them through and bring them home as quick as possible so they can deal with everything that they need to deal with. And when people were stepping off the plane, you could see who were the tourists and who were the Israelis, because when the tourists saw soldiers and officers waiting on the exit of the plane, they waved to us and they shook our hands, and they thought that we were there to see them in and to welcome them. And you can see the Israelis who realized why we were waiting there. And I think this shows the situation where the Israeli community is put in, and the people who realize who we are and what we do there.
I think it's really important that to say that the casualties department is one of a kind in the world. And there is no army in the world that has this kind of department. We are there from the very first moment that the family, that the soldier got hurt or die. And the meaning of that is that we have a unit, special unit, that knows how to get to the house of the soldier and to knock on the right door and to bring the message to the family and to take care of the family from this moment until the funeral and after the funeral. We are there. It's a little bit strange. Who are those people who are now in my house and they're not going anywhere? They knocked on my door. They brought me the worst notice of my life, and they are not going anywhere. They are there all through the grievement of the days of the Shiva, and in the funeral, and then in the memorial day. And afterwards comes the casualties officer, and she's with me, and everything I need, she's available on the phone, on every team, everything. From helping the siblings in school until help me with the banks. And it's all the things that you can think about. They can ask us to help them, and we are there for them. And it doesn't...
We have situations where they call us up and they ask us to join them. I had a widow call me up throughout the war, after a month after her loss, where she wanted to go back to the apartment where she used to live with her husband that she lost. And she didn't want to go back there alone. And she felt like if the family would join her, they would be judgmental and she wouldn't feel comfortable with going back with them. And it was a moment where you take a widow who has just lost her husband back to the place they lived. And we help her pack up all their belongings and go through the things which belong to him and sort them out. And on every stage where the army enter the home of the soldier, from the notification until the commanders come in and explain what happened and why the soldier has fallen, and giving back the belongings which belong to the soldier back to the family. And throughout the years, every time his birthday comes up and the day he was fallen comes up, we do a ceremony and we meet them from the beginning, and we try with the new families we meet, we try to show them how this is not something we are here just for the close months or for the first year. And we try explaining how this connection and this relationship is going to be from now on, as long as they want and as long as they're accepting us into their homes, we will come there and visit. And
we're strangers only for the first moment, and then we can be the closest friend.
So that's exactly the mind-boggling part. It's developing a relationship that starts from the lowest part of most human lives and grows to be, from what you're describing, one of the closest partnership a human can have with someone who's been there for their lowest moments in life. And I think that that's something that is truly, Meital, as you said, unique to Israel, because as we said in the beginning, this is a people's army. So you have situations that I'm sure you've encountered, and I'd love to hear more about, where you have a son who might have lost their father and is now drafting and following their footsteps, a son or a daughter who lost one of their parents. And that doesn't mean that that child is now losing the support of the casualties department. So I'd love to hear if you have an experience with a second generation or someone following in the footsteps of their parents.
I was the casualties officer of a brave widow that had a 2-year-old girl in this moment. And I was there in this unit. And through the years, I met this woman and her girl, her orphan, in those summer camps that we've talked about. And every year I saw her. She was 3, she was 4, she was 7. And then she got 16. And she told me, I want to be like you. I want to be a casualties officer. So I told her, why? She told me, I remember you from the day that you came in when I was 2 years old. And I want to be there for families like you've been there to us. And 2 years after, she got to the IDF and she was a soldier in our unit. And this was for her a closure, a very big closure. It was a very big proud for her mother and for me, and especially for after all these years.
That's beautiful. I have to ask you, though, because from the conversation we had and from what I know and understand, you walk around and you have the people that I meet from the casualties department usually have such a big smile and are usually radiating this positive energy. And I think that for a normal human being, you deal with such heavy matters all of the time, so much death and grief and loss, that I have to ask you, if you're willing to share, where do you find the energy and the willpower to do this again and again and again, and to land from your own power to other people?
Anyone who is part of the casualty department of the Army chooses this job. No one is assigned to become a casualty soldier or an officer without choosing the job. And I've heard many reasons why people choose to be on this side and, as you said, be surrounded with so much loss and grief. And I feel like, first of all, we always try to remember that this is not our personal stories, and we have to be strong there for the families. Of course, there are stories which you find more connection to, and names which bring up names that you know, and ages of the brothers that could be the ages of your personal siblings as well. But I feel privileged to serve in this job and to be on the side which can support and create that connection between the Israeli society and the army. And we're a national army, but we're very, very much connected to the Israeli society. And everyone I know, friends my age and older, who are on their reserve duty now because of the war, and everyone unites by putting on their uniform. And even though we're such a vast demographic nation, everyone joins in on that moment where everyone puts on their uniform and become united as one, going for the same mission and wanting to protect the country. I think the hardest part on the 7th of October, when, of course, we train for these situations, and we always know as inside the casualty department, we try to be ready even for major events and big catastrophes. And at first, we were working automatically. We came to our bases and we were called up. We are always alert. We are always on call during wars and not during wars, to be called up and to come and do our jobs. It only sunk in a few days after, where you start recognizing names and friends and people you knew who come up on the lists, who are wounded, who were killed. And it took me only a few days to realize the situation that we are in and that everything is so real. And now, nearly seven months later, I can say that I don't regret any moment of choosing this job, and I'm privileged to serve in this job. And as long as we can be that connection and be there for the families and be there for the wounded soldiers and the commanders and everyone who needs us, we will be there.
And I can add on that you give and you get. You get a lot from this assignment.
Sometimes we come to support and we leave the homes more supported than we came to give their support. And we meet such
strong families and strong people who
rise up and take their stories and their personal loss and create so many special things to tell their legacy and to remember the way that they lived and to keep what they were, what they dreamt to do, going. And Tal said we also supported a lot.
And you feel very, very meaningful. I can say that every day when I wake up, I feel that it's very important that I would go to work today. So we know that, and we know that we're doing something that is very, very meaningful, not only to the family in the start or in the end, but to the army and to the society. And it's very important that we will hold this. But if I would not avoid the question that you've asked, so we have groups of support and we can go to get support one-on-one, so psychology support. And we take care of ourselves, not enough, but we do that because we understand that if our bucket will be empty, so we cannot give to the others. And we try so much to fill this bucket. And we have the support through the department.
I feel like being a casualty officer has become part of my identity. And when, after long days where we've been visiting families and going around hospitals, and we meet our friends who do the same jobs as us, I feel like that identity and speaking to each other and telling them about how our day has gone and the things we were told and the stories that we met and the families which we went into their homes, I feel like sharing and going through our day-to-day service together helps us and helps one another by dealing with the situations that we meet. We give tips to one another, and because there's no story which is like the other. So we carry on learning and we speak to each other, and that always helps.
Well, Tal and Yaakov, I want to thank you for taking the time, for participating in the podcast, for talking about the job that you do. I think we covered some topics that are so interesting for people to listen and so innovative in how military meets bereaved families and how military deals with loss. And I think that our listeners are certainly going to learn a few new facts. So I hope that you learn something new.
Thank you. Thank you, Yaakov.
The open threat to destroy us.